Well, good morning, church. It's been a long time since I've been part of a praise team, and it was kind of fun to do that this weekend. So thank you, Levon. It was pretty cool. Acting last week, bass guitar playing next week. I don't want to scare you, but you should come next week. Actually, it's communion next Sabbath, so that's a special time. And as we talk about encounters with God, communion is one of those times where we really try and create an encounter with God. It's a special service, and you're invited to come to that. Today, a lot of our church members, church family, are away. There's a group of people camping and other people visiting family and kids, and it seems like a lot of people have gone away on the same week. Once the ball starts rolling, you know, if you're gone, then I'm going to be gone. And I'm glad that you're here. A lot of our leaders are gone, which actually works out pretty cool. Don't mean it like that. But we're going to talk about the woman at the well today. And God used perhaps one of the most unlikely people to share his gospel with the village. A lot of people said, well, you know, you should use this person, but Jesus would often let the leaders go camping. Are you following? And he would work with those who were still at church. And maybe there's a number of you. I've been here almost a year now, and I'm thinking I'm knowing this congregation a little bit. And there might be a number of you that are here today that think the leadership of the church is sort of left to the others. That's not Jesus' style. So we're going to let them go. And I am preaching to you today. And it's my hope that you will have this encounter, this experience, this sense of calling that God places on our lives. Because it's really easy to think, well, you know, if the preacher's going to do something on encounters with God from characters in the Bible, he's probably going to use Moses. I mean, you'd think, right? And I will. We're going to look at Moses in a couple of weeks. Maybe Jacob. We did Jacob already, you know, sort of the Abraham, Isaac, Jacob crew. Some of these strong stalwarts of the Bible. But if you look at those characters, as we're seeing, they're not saints when God called them. They were pretty messed up in the middle of a pattern of lying, or in Moses' case, a murderer. You know, these were not the people that perhaps you and I would have easily chosen, especially when we get to the character of the woman at the well. And so I wanted to bring out a character like this, and this one just seemed to just jump out of the pages. The story is in John chapter 4. And I'm not going to read the story, but I am going to keep my Bible open today. If I turn it around the right way, because there's a lot that could jump out of these pages. And so I'm going to keep my thumb open in it, and I invite you to do the same and see what phrase happens in there that might speak to you this morning. Now, on Thursday, my car hasn't had its brake pads changed in a long time. So I thought that I would go to a brake place down here and get my oil changed and have them look at the brakes, which is often a dangerous thing to do, right? If you go to a brake place and say, look at my brakes, what do you expect them to say? You need new brakes. Well, this place didn't. They said I still had a third left on them. So I'm going to go back there. And when I was done with that, I got the oil changed in my car, and I had a coupon. I'm not a big coupon person, but every now and then if a coupon jumps out of the pages, and I should use that one. I had a coupon for the grocery outlet. I don't know if any of you go to the grocery outlet here in town, but you can get some frozen pizzas for not much money at the grocery outlet. Before my kids come over, I always visit. There's a lot of kid food on sale at the grocery outlet. Not a lot of high-quality vegetables, but some good frozen foods. And so I went in there, because I had a coupon for something, and I thought, I'll go in and I'll see if it's worth it. And I went in, and I had the distinct impression that they had sort of put $10 on the price and then gave me a coupon for $5, you know. So I decided to let that go. And when I came out, next, you know the store that's next to the grocery outlet? The dollar store, right? I can do a lot of damage in the dollar store. And they had some fake plants outside. And I'm somebody that likes to mix fake plants with real plants. And there's some others of you around here that like doing this. You know who you are. It's awesome. And I saw that. Oh, a dollar? Oh, I bet you I could get something that would look good in my plants for a dollar. So I walked towards the dollar store. And as I get there, those doors that, you know, just at the right time, or nearly at the right time, depending on how fast you walk, a guy comes running out of the dollar store. An older guy, older than me, quite a bit older than me. Not that old, but older than me. And he comes running out. His bike's right there. He gets on his bike. And as he gets on his bike, one of the store clerks comes running out after him. And I had a split second to decide, do I get involved or not? And so I compromised. I kind of half got involved. I just sort of stepped to the side of my regular walking. So he had to swerve around. And when he swerved around, the clerk was able to get him and pull a bunch of candy out of his coat pocket. And the guy went back in like, I got it. And the people said, oh, he had a lot more than that on him. But yay for you for getting one packet. I'm in there looking at some other things. You can't just go in for just some fake flowers. You know, there might be other things that you need while you're in the dollar store. I'm looking around, procrastinating writing this sermon, actually. And I heard some loud shouting off to the side. And I can't ignore that sort of stuff. So I wander over that way. Not that I needed to hear it, but I wanted to see what I was hearing. And there was this older woman, older than me, standing there with a cart and a big basket in the cart. And she's telling these two young store clerks, no, you will not look in my bag. And they're like, man, we just want to just look inside. She's like, you are accusing me of stealing. Do I look like a thief to you? And I so wanted to answer that question because she did. And if she didn't look like one, she was certainly sounding like one. And so, but I'm so, you know, I mean, I have learned over life not to get involved in what is not my business because sometimes I really want to. And I was feeling bad for these two young store clerks. They looked like 18, 19 years old. And this woman was, I mean, she was yelling loud at them. They never did get to look inside of her bag. She paid for one thing and then went out to the car. And one of the store clerks followed her without her seeing. And when she put the contents of her bag in the trunk of the car, he ran up and grabbed it and took it back to the store. And she was cursing at him, saying stuff that I can't say in church. Merced is a fun place to live in sometimes. You mix this with the people that like to sleep on my deck, and I don't know. I feel like I'm in the right place. Because Jesus and the gospel is for everyone. And sometimes in our nice, comfortable church here on the suburbs, the bus doesn't even run out this far. So we're not going to get bus people, thankfully, in our church. Don't clip that and quote me. Because I say that with a huge amount of sarcasm. We can get pretty comfortable here. But Jesus in his ministry intentionally went out of his way to meet a wider variety of people. And this is the good news of the gospel. Because when I was in the dollar store, I felt pretty cool. I didn't think they were going to be checking my bag. Which, if they had done, it would have been okay. Because, praise God, I don't feel the need to steal from the dollar store. But part of me has to ask, how desperate and empty does your life have to be for you to feel the need to steal from the dollar store? That is a way of life that I am unfamiliar with. And if I stay here in this place, hanging out with you people, I'm never going to be familiar with that. And Jesus went out of his way to meet and interact with people that were shunned from society. That was Jesus' style. You do not have to be somebody to have an encounter with God. And that's what we are going to look at today. And I've got like a 2-minute movie that I'd like to put up on the screen that portrays the woman at the well in ways that I think are fantastic. And I would like to share that with you this morning as we get going. If you didn't catch all of that, I'm going to play it again at the end. But it's powerful, isn't it? I want to look this morning at the anatomy of an encounter with God. There are two distinct parts of an encounter with God. The first part is that God meets you where you are. You don't have to become something else. You don't have to try and attain a certain level of perfection or goodness in order to have an encounter with God. You don't have to reach up far enough to have an encounter with God. God will come to where you are. He will meet you on your terms. But the second part of the anatomy of an encounter with God is that He doesn't just leave you there. He doesn't come and say, "Oh, poor you." He actually invites you to walk along with Him and invites you to bring long-lasting, ever-eternal change into your life. These are the anatomy of an encounter with God. And I want to look at them today because this story portrays them very well. So if you're in John chapter 4, by the way, you know what comes before John chapter 4, right? John chapter 3. Exactly, perfect. And I know you know what's in John chapter 3. A lot of you do. Especially if you go to verse 16, okay? "For God so loved the world that He gave His one and only Son, that whosoever believeth Him should not have to die, but can live forever and ever." And He said this to Nicodemus. On the scale of humanity in Jesus' world, Nicodemus and the woman at the well didn't mix much. Okay? But between these two chapters, we see that Jesus will meet either one. Whether you are connected, wealthy, have all your needs taken care of, or whether you are shunned from your society, Jesus is interested in having an encounter with you. So none of us here this morning, as far as I understand it, sort of go either way on this scale. We are in this scale. Jesus wants to have an encounter with you. So He walks into Samaria. He didn't have to walk here. You know that, right? He could have done what a lot of the Jews done and walked around. It's further to go, but most people would walk further so that they could avoid that part of town. It wasn't a town, that part of the country, but for us, we would say that part of the town. And we do that today. This is not unusual. We could judge this and go, "Oh, you know, of course, if I was living then, I would have walked through Samaria too." Because Samaria doesn't frighten us, because we have this story. But there are other parts in our communities, in our lives, where I don't go there. I lived in Washington, D.C. for a while. I was told, "Don't go to those parts. Don't stay on the metro to those stops." And I listened because I was foreign, and I have learned, this is the sixth country I've ever lived in, I have learned, listen to the locals. They tend to know what they're talking about. I did drive through once, by mistake, I got lost. And I didn't care where I came out, just as long as I came out. But Jesus walked through there. It was a taboo that He broke. And He's going to meet this woman. And I believe that He had an appointment with her. And He's going to meet this woman. And she is going to get an encounter with God. She's not expecting it today. Nothing is strange in her routine. She hasn't gone away to a retreat. She hasn't even gone to church. She's not even on vacation or taking a break. Doesn't seem she's particularly mad or angry at anyone or anything. She's doing the dishes. She's doing what she did every day in order to survive. And Jesus, in the middle of her regular routine, just shows up. Now, interestingly enough, He shows up and meets her at Jacob's well. We talked about Jacob a couple weeks ago. Here's just a little by-the-side lesson. When you have an encounter with God, it often leads to others having an encounter with God. And quite often you get to have an encounter with God because somebody before you also had an encounter with God. Because God works through people. He works through you. Sometimes people get to meet God because they meet you. God has set it up that way. And Jacob had lived a long time before this was the taboo area. Long time before. And now, this is where somebody new, somebody shunned, somebody just let go, the lowest of the low, is now going to meet God because somebody else had met God there before. It was a place where Jesus was not expected to be, and yet he was there. So we've got Jacob's well. We've also got the bucket. If you look in John chapter 4, you come across the bucket. Verse 11. I love the bucket in this story. Because if you go up to the first verse, Jesus learned that the Pharisees had heard, Jesus is baptizing and making more disciples than John. Though it says, make sure we know that Jesus didn't baptize them personally. The disciples did that. Because apparently, even back then, people probably would have, well, Jesus baptized me. It was like saying, Ellen White baptized me. Or, you know, certain people, Billy Graham baptized me. And so, you know, Jesus, no, we're not having any of that stuff. There's no hierarchy again. So Jesus left Judah to return to Galilee. Jesus was at this well, for all intents and purposes, because he was getting too popular, too powerful, too influential, and those that were used to having influence were getting mad at him. So this person that had too many friends is sitting at a well, and he meets somebody that has no friends. But the person that has no friends has the bucket. And the person that has too many friends has no bucket. Jesus needed the woman at the well, which is really cool. Because quite often when we go to help somebody else, we make sure that they know that they need us. We take sandwiches, we take money, we take food, clothes, you know, we sort of ride in like a knight in shining armor and give the leftovers that we don't need and ride off again. This is not Jesus' style. It really builds someone up when they discover that we need them. The people that are most attached, as I witness, most attached to this church are the ones who do everything, that feel needed here. If you just come through those doors and you sit here and we keep helping you, it gets kind of dull after a while. This is one reason why I'm a pastor, because I get bored in church. I cannot just sit there. I left college deciding not to be a pastor, and I went to a church, and you could not make me just sit there. Because if I was going to keep coming to this place, I was going to have to do something. And about 3 months later, they ended up hiring me as a preacher. I like to think God had something to do with that, but I cannot just sit still. I want to be needed. Those of us who are here today that are in Pathfinders. Pathfinders is kind of hopping a little bit right now. It's kind of fun. And the kids that are coming, we love that you are coming. But this last week, we all decided we got nothing done. Isn't that right? I mean, we were busy for about an hour and 40 minutes, and we got nothing done. But we all looked at each other, and we knew something good had happened there that day. And I'm sensing from the staff here that I see here today that I think you're signed up. I don't feel like I have to persuade you to come back every week. Because what's happening with these kids and the relationships that we are building, it clearly means something. You staff in that Pathfinder Club, you know that you are needed there. It's obvious, and ministry is happening. And that makes church an experience with God. It makes it mean something. I'm still always incredibly grateful for those that do volunteer their time here. Don't get me wrong. There are other things you could do in your life that would be easier and people would moan at you less. Because when you volunteer to do stuff, it's not long. If you're doing something important, people will moan at you for doing it. And there's easier ways of life. So I totally respect what you're doing. I get paid to do this. You guys finish your jobs and then come and do it. And I have huge respect for that. But I do also know that it's not from my thanks that you do it. You do it because, and you love to do it, when it obviously starts to mean something in somebody's life. So if you do get to be in charge of something here at church, pass that on. In Pathfinders, we need to give our Pathfinders also ownership in our church. Our youth can't just come and sit in that room and expect that, oh, this is a great church. I just get to sit here and watch all these adults be really busy. That won't work. And Jesus knows this. So he comes and he's sitting by the well and he asks her for a drink. And the woman at the well says, but sir, you have no bucket. And the well is deep. Like, yeah, I know. But you do have a bucket. And you can give me something to drink. And she is shocked. You don't have to read a lot between the lines here in John chapter 4 to find that she's kind of in this dual zone of like completely shocked. I cannot talk to this guy. And also like, I really want to talk to this guy. I mean, of course she does. She's had 5 husbands. She's not shy. Right? I mean, something's going on here. This is real life that is happening. And Jesus is using this. And he's showing up where she is. Because after the bucket, we come to the part where she's kind of really interested in what's going on. And Jesus does what every religious leader should do when you find yourself talking to a woman like this. Go get your husband. Right? He's being very smart. But it's more than that. Because that's a loaded question. A loaded statement, a loaded request. She says, I have no husband. Jesus said, you are right. You've had 5 husbands. And the one you're living with now is not your husband. Now, we can focus on this. We can focus on the bucket. We can focus on the well. And these are all incredible things to see that Jesus meets you right where you're at. But you see, Jesus doesn't just stay there in that point. I don't know how it is for you, but when I come across sin, or something awkward, or something that someone might feel very uncomfortable about if it were public knowledge, it's very easy to ignore truth in order to keep the peace. I'm British, and this is what we do. We call it the stiff upper lip. In the home, husband dear, do I look fat in this dress? You all know the right answer, right? But I'm not sure how Jesus would answer that question. People will come to me. I've asked them to preach. And they say, oh, I don't think it went very well. Guess what I say? I might not even have heard it. No, you were great. I do say that, and you know that. And by the way, I mean it. You sound like you're not believing me, but I do. Okay? But we have these sort of rules in society where we kind of ignore the awkward things. I'm not pretty enough. Oh, yes, you are. And it's nice to do that. But you know, when somebody says, I'm not pretty enough, they're opening up a door to like, there's something inside of me that I don't like about myself. If Jesus was there, don't you think he would say something along the lines of, what's going on? In fact, he'd go, yeah, I know you think that. And here's why. And we don't always know that about each other. But there's an invitation there by somebody to say, I am not readily accepted. Will you accept me? And we need that from each other. Now, I'm not saying you should now, from now on, go around and call everybody fat and ugly. Don't do that. This is not Jesus' calling. But Jesus isn't somebody that would ignore the elephant in the room and let somebody just carry on living like they're living. Jesus had no problem getting incredibly involved in somebody's life. So when Jesus said, and I believed he knew what he was saying, go get your husband. He was ready to have a conversation with her. And she was ready to talk back. Because here was a guy that wasn't supposed to be talking to a woman, wasn't supposed to be talking to a Samaritan, had all sorts of taboos going on. And he was inviting the conversation. And she felt incredibly accepted. This video clip that we showed, I think, reveals that incredibly well. Not expecting to be loved or accepted by this man, but you are. But you're also telling me the truth. And people that tell you the truth often have an agenda to be mean at you, and those that are trying to be nice to you often ignore the truth. But here came along a man that would tell the truth and hang with you. Isn't that beautiful? That is the character of Jesus. So when you have an encounter with God, this is available to you. And one of the reasons many of us never have encounters with God is because we are not ready to face the truth about ourselves. And Jesus has a hard time hanging there. But if you are ready to face the truth about who you are, God can show up in amazing ways in your life. And he will be tender and he will be kind with you, but he will not avoid what is going on in your life. Amen? And this is powerful. We don't always know how much we crave that, because this is what we call today, this is what we call intimacy. When someone who knows you so incredibly well spends time with you. We're always afraid that if that person knew what I was really thinking or what I was really like, they would not want to hang out with me. And we might be right, because we're looking to be built up. We're looking for other people to tell us how great we are. And we're not prepared to spend that sort of time with somebody else. But real encounters with God requires honesty. It just does. And if you have all sorts of complicated patterns of how you get to lie to yourself about yourself, God is always kept at a distance in those circumstances. This is why confession is such an important part of the salvation process. Because confession is powerful. Because you are confessing your weaknesses, your disabilities, the fact that you're not as great as that person is, or you can't do what this person does over there, or you haven't been able to give up this particular habit in your life. Confession says, I need help. I need salvation. So, in the anatomy of an encounter with God, there are two parts. The first part is that Jesus meets you where you are. And that is a miracle all by itself and is a fantastic part of the experience. But the second part of the anatomy of an encounter with God is that he doesn't just leave you there. This is the full gospel. The gospel isn't simply about the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. I don't want to belittle that and I don't want to ignore that. But he offers you so much more than that. He offers you more than forgiveness. He offers you more than meeting you where you are. He offers to pull you out and bring you in and walk alongside you into eternity. He offers to change you. He offers to bring you to what you were created to be, to what you want to be. And for that, we have to be honest, we have to be open, and we have to be ready for some hard truths sometimes. And God will do that. That is the way of Jesus. And he does it with love and with an amazing amount of insight. So he comes and meets this woman right where she is. And he asks her, please give me a drink. He invites her to share. And he treats her with respect. I don't know if you've ever met anybody famous. Somebody that you know, but they don't know you. Now, one day I'll tell you the story about when I met Princess Diana. But that's a different sermon, a different time. But I've met some Adventist preachers. The Doug Batchelors of the world, the Mark Finleys of the world, you know, the Jose Rojas's of the world. You know, people that we know, but they don't know us. You can have two different experiences when you meet somebody famous. They can just dismiss you because they don't know you, they don't need you, and you're kind of in their way. Or they will take the time to find out who you are and to sort of connect with you for a minute. They're probably not going to remember, but they know that you are going to remember this for a long time. Those are special people. They really are. You can get through a month of life on the back of something like that. Now, my job at camp meeting is to stand right about here. Actually, my job at camp meeting is to stand here. And everybody that's going to go on the platform when I'm on, comes through me. And I'm the gatekeeper. You don't get on. We feel very powerful. You don't get on with that. But when it's time, I step out of the way and usher them onto the platform. So I get to meet a lot of these Adventist rock stars. And both kinds exist. There are some beautiful people amongst that crowd that clearly, in my opinion, live what they preach. And some that I'm probably not going to listen to their sermons again. I feel like I got a backstage view. Maybe they had a bad day. And maybe I should let that go. I'm making a judgment call. But it's okay because I wasn't in this room. This is the non-judgment room, right? Should be a little bit perhaps wider net than that. But Jesus' style, we know which one he was. He received this woman. And he offers her salvation. He states the obvious. He says, if you only knew the gift that God has for you and who I am, you would ask me for water. Of course, he only does this after establishing contact with her. And asking her first. But then he doesn't stay at that point. He offers her salvation. A way out. And this is huge. My best teacher in college was the one that told me, you can't preach. He didn't say it like that. He just revealed to me what was in the way of my preaching. He says, it seems to me, Stephen, that... Well, I'd use an example of Tony Blair. Tony Blair hadn't even become Prime Minister of England yet. But he was becoming well-known to the masses. And I said, he strikes me as someone who's all smiles and no substance. Which wasn't trying to be a political statement. It's just that he was a new breed of politician. And he knew how to market himself very well. Many countries have gone through this. And my professor at the end of my first sermon says, it seems to me, Stephen, that you are all smiles and no substance. And I still remember that. every time I sit down to write a sermon. He claims he has no recollection of telling me that, because I've seen him since. I went back to do a week of prayer at New Bowl College, and I had great fun in reminding him of this statement. But I said, it's huge. And this is Jesus' character. When you have an encounter with God, he will reveal truth to you. And he did to this woman. He met her where she was at. But then he invited her to come and participate and to share in his kingdom, in his way of life. She's interested. It seems that she is done trying to fix herself. And by the way, I've been divorced once. I don't want to go through that a second time. I think by the time that had happened five times, maybe she was like, is it me? You know? So my guess is that you know, Jesus will often wait at the right moment to have that encounter with you. Because if he came to me in college, I'd be like, I got it. It's all right. I got it. I mean, I would never have said that, but that was clearly how I was living my life. But when you're broken, he can come in, meet you in your brokenness where you are, and then he can invite you out. And this woman who was at the well was clearly open to this. She did not like going in the hot day sun to get the water without her town around her, without the conversations of other women, other people doing the same job that she did. And Jesus says, imagine never being thirsty again. And if you drink the water that I give you, you will never have any needs again. You won't need a man to make you complete. You won't need to have these women come with you to collect water in order to make you feel complete. You will be whole. A lot of us spend so much time and effort trying to fix ourselves. I've met alcoholics who will say, I haven't had a drink for X number of years, but I am still an alcoholic. And that's not just true for alcohol. Any vice that we might sort of deal with in our own lives, we know about this. And when you try and fix it yourself, these are the things that you keep coming up against over and over again. But Jesus is saying, if you follow me and you drink the water that I offer you, you will not thirst again. Isn't that good news? You won't have to worry about this condition anymore. And that's what he is offering this person that he's meeting at the well that day. When you have an encounter with God, you are understood. You know that you mean something. Your whole life, even everything that has happened to you in the past and up to this point, it means something. When you have an encounter with God, he will share what you need from his source. And there is no limit to that. None. Verse 25, after Jesus explains the role of the Jews and the needs of her people, he says that there will be somebody that will come and save people. And she goes, oh, I know the Messiah will come. And then Jesus says, you know what Jesus says? He says, I am he. Do you know how often Jesus shared that specifically? Very, very seldom. There were times, but not very often. If you go back to John 3 with Nicodemus, not really. I mean, Nicodemus thinks he's a wonderfully wise teacher, and that there's something there. Nicodemus is not coming out at night just because he's like the average sort of a person. There's something going on. But Jesus doesn't say, yeah, by the way, I'm the Messiah. He says blatantly, right out to the woman at the well, I am the Messiah. He hadn't even told his disciples that yet at that point, as far as I can understand. His disciples are still wandering around like, you know, I'm going to be next to him. No, I'm going to be next to him, you know. But he's able to say to this woman, I am the Messiah. And suddenly this woman of no reputation, who was ignored and was shunned, was able to, without a shadow of a doubt, having had an encounter with God, she was able to receive salvation. An encounter with God can happen anywhere, at any time, to anyone. It is God's prerogative. And when you are surrendered, when you are open, when you are at your wit's end, when you cannot fix yourself, then your God will show up and go, "Hi, could you give me something to drink?" He demonstrates that you have some worth. And then he invites you. You, knowing and understanding you, into an eternity with him.
"I am a woman of no distinction, of little importance. I am a woman of no reputation save that which is bad. You whisper as I pass by and cast judgmental glances, though you don't really take the time to look at me or even get to know me. For to be known is to be loved, and to be loved is to be known. And otherwise, what's the point in doing either one of them in the first place? I want to be known. I want someone to look at my face and not just see two eyes, a nose, a mouth, and two ears, but to see all that I am and could be, all my hopes, loves, and fears. But that's too much to hope for, to wish for, or pray for, so I don't, not anymore. Now I keep to myself, and by that I mean the pain that keeps me in my own private jail, the pain that's brought me here at midday to this well. To ask for a drink is no big request, but to ask it of me, a woman unclean, ashamed, used and abused, an outcast, a failure, a disappointment, a sinner. No drink passing from these hands to your lips could ever be refreshing, only condemning, as I'm sure you condemn me now, but you don't. You're a man of no distinction, though of the utmost importance, a man with little reputation, at least so far. You whisper and tell me to my face what all those glances have been about, and you take the time to really look at me. But don't need to get to know me, for to be known is to be loved, and to be loved is to be known. And you know me. You actually know me. All of me and everything about me. Every thought inside and hair on top of my head. Every hurt stored up. Every hope. Every dread. My past and my future. All I am and could be. You tell me everything. You tell me about me. And that which is spoken by another would bring hate and condemnation. Coming from you brings love, grace, mercy, hope, and salvation. I've heard of one to come who would save a wretch like me. And here in my presence, you say, I am he. To be known is to be loved, and to be loved is to be known. And I just met you, but I love you. I don't know you, but I want to get to. Let me run back to town. This is way too much for just me. There are others, brothers, sisters, lovers, haters, the good and the bad, sinners and saints, who should hear what you've told me, who should see what you've shown me, who should taste what you gave me, who should feel how you forgave me. For to be known is to be loved, and to be loved is to be known. And they all need this too. We all do need it for our own."
Cool thing is, the story didn't stop at the well, did it? She went back to her village and God was able to have an encounter with many other people because she had met God. We're going to be talking about this in the next few weeks, and I want it from you guys. We're going to put a book together about your encounters with God. Don't be shy. Be thinking about this. You can do it anonymously if you want to. You can put your name to it. I'm looking for things about 500 words, but others of you have already come up with various ideas. If you've got a good idea, we'll incorporate it into this book. This is the church's book, and we'll publish it. We'll do some ebook publishing, and we'll send it off and bring it back. And this will be our stories of our encounters with God. So be thinking about that. Let's pray. Dear God, bless this congregation. This week, as they do the dishes, as they sit in cubicles, as they fix various things, as they help people out, as they run their business, as they do the things that they have to do, show up in their lives, God. Be with them and bless them, I pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Happy Sabbath, you guys. Enjoy it. The summer is coming to an end, so get out there and enjoy a beautiful Sabbath today. We'll see you next week for communion.